is everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello once again and welcome to the Spirits Work Show, the metaphysical and spiritual show with a difference. I'm Sylvie Avery.
I'm Mick Avery. Hi.
And we are mediums, healers and authors who have chosen to serve humanity through our gifts of spirit communication. On the show, we focus on education, and through Mick's deep trance mediumship, we are able to bring you the truth as to the nature of your existence direct from the other side of life. And on today's show, we'll be discussing lots of questions from our listeners. And if you would like to join us and ask your own, we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's only a quick call. And it's 001-530-876-3222. And I'd just like to say that actually, just in case you're not aware, it's actually not a reading style show, so it won't be a reading from the spirit world, a personal reading, but it will be general questions to do with anything that you wanted to know from a spirit guide that possibly us humans, mere mortals, wouldn't actually be able to know or even comprehend a lot
of. Or even think about it, really.
Or even think that there was an answer, yes.
Yes, or even a question.
Yes, so
I know nothing.
Your deep questions will be welcome.
Yes, well, hi, I'm Mick Avery, and as well as Spirits Work on the wonderful and very, very much ever-present bbsradio.com, every Sunday at 6 p.m. GMT, which is 10 a.m. PST, we have another radio show, which is called Spirit Teaching. On that, you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 4 p.m. PST, which is 12 midnight GMT. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, maybe you would like to book an Akashic reading or any of the other readings that we have to offer, and we have a whole bunch of different stuff. We even do house diagnostics and things like that for maybe if you're going to move home or if you're thinking about it or whatever. Anyway, we suggest you go visit our websites, which are at www.spirit-teaching.com and also at www.spiritsworkradio.com. At this moment in time, that site, I think it's still flagged at the moment by Google, malware problems, but it should be up and running because it has been swept and everything, so anyone wants to go on there, you can. And we also have mickavy.com as well. Anyway, each week, live on the show, I channel an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for a group of highly evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. Gregory himself had an earth life in the early 1700s in England. But now he has come back to share the vast insights and wisdom he has gained access to with those of us still on the earth plane. And, of course, as Sylvie said, he does that as well in concert with a whole mass of other people from the White Cloud Group as well, because they're all sort of, you know, scientists and people who had gained great education and insight in the physical world, not like me. And
or maybe not. Maybe they haven't had a physical life.
Yes, not that's true. And maybe some of them just swept floors in their physical life. It doesn't really matter, because point is, progress is open to all, and it doesn't matter what actually you learn or don't learn in the physical life, does it? Well, to a certain extent. I mean, I know it does to some people. Oh, God, I'm digging myself into a hole here.
Yeah. You're just paid to go to sleep, Mick.
I'm just paid to go to sleep.
I'm going to give you
okay. Yes, okay. I'm going to do that right now then, and so that we can get on with it. So without further ado, that's what I'm going to do, and hand you back to Sylvie. Bye.
Good.
Goodbye.
Good.
Bye.
Yes, Gregory is the spokesperson for this White Cloud Group, and they consist of scientific minds and scholars from all sorts of areas, and hopefully they're here to help us to become more aware of the nature of our existence. And you know, if they can explain the unexplainable and bring us intelligent, important information in a simple, down-to-earth manner that everyone can understand, then this is, you know, progress, as Mick said, is open to all. So, you know, whether the spirit world are discussing quantum physics or the paranormal, evolution, life on other worlds, spirit guides or whatever, you know, the sky's the limit, really, on this show that we do. It's just really down to the limitation of our questioning for the answers that we can gain from them, because if at 1 week Gregory can't give us the answers, then he will go and research that and come back the next week and with those answers for us. So anyway, it's when Mick goes into trance, you know, his spirit and his consciousness are actually transported somewhere else, so there's no actual errors for interpretation from his mind getting into it. And so it's just complete personality of spirit guide Gregory. And if you would like an Akashic reading with Gregory, you can have one of those, and you can find out about that on www.spirit-teaching.com. Just go to our Akashic reading page and you can find out all sorts of absolutely wonderful things about you, your core energy, your soul group, your pathway in life and that sort of thing. And it's all on there. And then you can get in touch with me and I will help you out if you want to know more, or if I can explain something else, I will. Okay. Hello, Gregory.
Love and light. Blessings be upon your journeys, my dear friends, everyone. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, friend, little bird. Hello.
Tweet, tweet.
Hello, friend.
Okay, so well, we've got actually lots of questions from our listeners that have come in already on emails.
Yes.
And so I'm just trying to figure out where to start here, which one to start with.
I think, really, my dear friend, as it is topical at this present time, we ought to really delve into the matter of medication.
Swine flu. Yes, there's a question here. Is there a government conspiracy to kill off the weak and the old with the vaccines? What are the dangers in the so-called treatment of the Tamil flu and the vaccine against it? Are we in danger of future side effects from the untested drugs? And in fact, is the swine flu itself man-made?
Yes, interesting. So, yeah. Well, my dear friend, where to start? To begin with, that whole situation is in error to begin with. Swine flu doesn't actually affect the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
The elderly are already immunized from swine flu.
Okay.
The people who are affected by it are those of certain age groups. The very young, up till, I understand, around 12 or 13 years of age, are particularly susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
There are reasons for that. I will go into those in a moment. Other age groups are those of the following, of the previous age, the previous generation, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see then that there are people in their 30s and up to the age of around 46, which will also be deeply affected by this, particularly nursing mothers or ladies who are expecting with child.
Mm-hmm.
The reasons for this are also very acute and necessary to understand. Perhaps we will start there to begin with. The whole situation surrounding women who are carrying children in the womb still are actually because of the fact that their antibodies are so depleted. It's not necessarily that they have had a certain kind of upbringing, which then means that they are more susceptible to these different viruses. The point is that this, in the main, then tends to strike women, particularly just after childbirth, I have to say. They are particularly prone to suffering from one kind of infection or another, whether it would be septicemia or whether it would be, if things didn't go quite right, for example, that everything was not cleared out properly after the birth, that as can sometimes happen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, the fact is that their antibodies, as I say, are completely in disarray in many respects, so that they do not have the right kinds of situations of bacteria within themselves, and they're usually there is a difference in platelet count, which simply means then that they are possibly inherently at risk at that time.
Mm.
Within children, now this is a different matter, because in the main what is tending to happen is because they actually haven't grown a resistance to this kind of virus. It simply means then that in many situations the anticipation of it is worse than the event itself. There's much talked about where perhaps situations of this particular kind of virus then has a anticlimactic role, in a sense. The first symptoms appear ready enough and appear to be taking the child into large overreaches of temperature and that kind of thing, as one would expect with a certain kinds of flu. However, within this influenza, it is something which then appears to repeat itself. It's a cyclical situation, so it means to say that in it's not necessarily over and done with in just a few days. It can be a resurgent situation that comes back again and again. Part of this, then, I suppose, is where the inherent risk lies, particularly within the present antiviral drug, which is being amassed and distributed at this time. The problem is to do with the actual treatment itself and its activity, of course, upon the neuro pathways and passageways in the physical body, as it can institute temporary paralysis. This, of course, is quite alarming for any child to go through. And there may well be cases, certain people, perhaps, who have, maybe they have a pre-undiagnosed condition to do with perhaps the structure of their lungs or heart or some such thing, whereby this neurological discrepancy from taking the drug itself then actually causes a much greater harm in their physical body system. So there are many other situations where it has often been said, even in these last situations that we observe from our side of life, that in fact children who are who take the antiviral medicine are actually worse affected than the actual virus itself would have been. Part also, we have to say, of the whole and entire situation is that if a child can overcome such a virus itself, it may well be handy that you have the antivirus in serum in just in case, but that what can happen is that for most children, they will go through a form of mild variation of it. It's not necessarily, except for just a few cases where they are more genetically susceptible to this kind of situation, that they would then succumb to it. Most will not. The point then is, well, the reason as to why the fear is perhaps that it has been harangued rather more clearly than it should have been, possibly. Purely and simply because there may well be a mutation of it if there runs the risk of then it, within that mutation, that the actual antivirus that you have at this present time simply doesn't make the mark. And this may well bring about a different effect. If one virus mutates into something different, it then may well be that it simply means that the actual serum itself simply has no effect whatsoever. Which means then, of course, that all of that large expense taken in manufacturing it and also distributing it is a complete waste of time. In other times, particularly at the first part of the 20th century, the Spanish flu was completely different because it killed millions. It took millions to our side of life in a very short space of time. This, once again, was a second situation. It happened twice, but that it never actually truly went away. From the second time, whereby it had mutated from the first in to a very detrimental effect. And it almost affected every single household, I understand, within Europe at that time.
So are all of these, are they variations of this?
Well, my dear friend, the point is that influenza is something that's just a part of human habitation. I understand that some other primates also, unfortunately, get the same or similar virus to it. There have been certain situations, of course, whereby there were certain tribes, for example, who never used to get anything. So you could say that influenza, in a sense, is part of the European way, part of the European genetic, if you like. They tend to be more susceptible. And, of course, that means entirely the whole of America, because of North America, at least, because many of those people were actually affected by the whole influenza cycle in any event. And of course that is the same for South America because of the Spanish who brought it with them as well. Mm. So in a sense it's like that genetic had, even though maybe it was a dormant model of it, had already become infected, even though it didn't actually rear its head, you see. Now there were many situations where people's tribes of the North Americas, and certainly to a certain extent in Central America as well, that there had been different kinds of meetings with these first explorers, and that they themselves had brought many diseases, and this wiped out many tribes, I understand, decimated huge amounts of peoples who lived in the plains of North America, as well as, just many, many peoples who perished at that. And they perished simply from the common cold, as well as from influenza and measles and whooping cough and many other forms of disease.
So, but I mean, the part of the question, are we in danger of future side effects from the untested drugs? Then, well, we have to be.
Yes, of course, absolutely. In exactly the same way that human beings have been in danger from the whole cycle of genetically modified food. In exactly the same way. I'm not suggesting here all genetically modified food. If you look at even the humble tomato plant or the potato, you will see that it has been gradually modified from the time at which it first began. Even corn, that is the corn which is
on the cob.
Yes.
Sweet corn.
Yes. Mm. Well, first of all, it was discovered, harvested by native people of North America. And it was black at that time, with certain purple varieties as well. Mm. And gradually it didn't mutate itself it was selectively grown. And that is different. That's not the same as something genetically modified. The point is with genetically modified food that you have is that is to make them resistant to certain forms of insect. That in itself does not mean to say that it is then free from all pesticides, as has been commonly thought. In actual fact, what tends to happen with genetically modified food is that large, vast amounts of different and much stronger chemicals actually have to be sprayed upon the crops that are genetically modified in order to keep them surviving. So part of this is that actually genetically modified food is far more expensive because of all of the large amounts of pesticides that have to be used in conjunction with them. So in many respects, this means to say, yes, and there are also other downside effects to these as well, purely and simply because you cannot grow from the seed of that genetically modified plant because you have to go back to the company that originally supplied you the plant.
So basically we are in danger not only of the future side effects from the untested drugs, but also from genetically modified crops. Really,
absolutely,
because it still is early days, and I know you said
and they're
before.
Still really untested. I know they've been actually in existence for at least 10 years or more, in some respects 15 years, particularly on the east coast of North America, of course, where over 10 billion people, 10 million people, were actually tested without their knowledge.
Yes, and then there's the wildlife as well, obviously, that GM food affects as well.
Yes, of course, because then it means that the actual pollen that is collected by bees, for example, or distributed in that way by other insects will be affected by that whole system as well, including, of course, the large amounts of insecticide that are on them as well.
But going back to the swine flu and the question, but it's not a conspiracy to kill off anybody, is it?
No, it is not.
No.
No, categorically, no. It is not.
Okay, well, thank you for that. That was from the UK Collective.
Yeah.
And so, okay, let's move on to our next question. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to join us with a question, then the number is free phone in the US and Canada. In the USA, it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222. But that's not free. Okay, let's go on to our next question then. Salvia, I know. Let's go on to the Mayans and Aztecs. Oh no, let's stay on her. Let's stay on the plant situation, shall we?
Yes, dear.
Salvia divinorum. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Why did the Native Americans feel the need to take this to enhance their meditational experience? What are the dangers with this, as it is still commonly used in some circles and practices?
Yes, I understand that. Well, my dear friend, it's the same as using any other kind of medication or whatever to enhance any other person's experience. What happens to you is that it enhances the experience. So then it means that perhaps for some people it helps them to create the gateway, the right pathway perhaps, or maybe not. Maybe it actually ends up in creating a difficult scenario, perhaps with side effects. Maybe it is that some parts of this situation are simply creating much more, how can I say these, temporal situations, so that perhaps the side effect itself becomes more of the narcotic effect rather than the spiritual activity that it was supposed to be taken for. Oftentimes, for example, that's not to be confused with people who take part in the tobacco ceremony of native groups, or people who take part in other situations, perhaps maybe within the sweat lodge or after the sweat lodge, perhaps taking part within the tobacco ceremony as well, so that they are, which is also, of course, can be a liberating spiritual experience.
I thought I was going to die, actually, when I had to perform one of those things. I'm sorry, go on.
Yes, my dear friend, but that was actually because you'd stopped smoking, and so...
I know, but you're not supposed to inhale it either, and because I used to be a smoker, I forgot what I was doing.
Yes,
you know?
I understand that, my dear friend.
Oh, it was dreadful.
And the point is, of course, with that is that you actually are supposed to smoke the entire pipe, so you have to keep going until the entire pipe is exhausted.
Mm.
So, yes. But so what I'm not really moving away from the subject of what you were talking about, but the situation is then there are many different concoctions. Some people, I understand, some tribes actually used to chew licorice as well, wild licorice, not necessarily for specific reasons that maybe some people would gather, but that actually some people found that licorice was a very good contemplative inducing drug, if you like.
Yeah, the effect of it was that way.
Yes, it was very pleasant and mellow.
Because last week you mentioned licorice as well, in saying that they used it to clean their teeth.
Yes, but also because it has many, many properties as well, particularly for not just to bring about bacterial release or something like that, but also for many other aspects of those kinds of properties.
So the Native American, they took that because it was there and they could, basically.
Yes, absolutely,
and
so.
Are there?
And why not?
And are there dangers with this was part of the other question, because it's still commonly used in some circles and practices.
Yes, I understand that. Mm. Well, the point is why would a person want to use that in particular? It may well be that it's just something they've always done.
Mm-hmm.
That's one argument, I suppose.
Well, I guess it would be most of the recreational, shall we say, drugs in inverted commas of various descriptions, including alcohol, are not usually very good for you.
No, that is true.
You know, obviously everything in moderation, of course, but...
Yes.
So I guess if there ever was something that was, reasonably, I don't know about good for you. That's not the right word.
I do not see that there are explicit dangers within this particular plant.
No, okay.
That's the point.
Obviously, we wouldn't advocate anybody taking it.
But I don't actually advocate anyone doing that in order to meditate.
No.
Simply because... Well, why don't you just do that and not bother meditating? The point is that the whole facet of why people meditate obviously has many different reasons, many different ramifications. The way that people think are that they perhaps want to bring about visualization or some such thing.
Yes, but we humans always want to, if there's, you know, if we can take the work and the effort out of anything,
you want
will.
A quick route.
Yes, we want a quick fix for absolutely everything, and that's just in everybody, I think, really, if everybody was honest about that, in preference anyway. So, you know, it's a bit like having a drink to relax. It's quicker to have probably a little nip of something, I guess some people might think, than meditating or whatever. To even walk into a room, they might need a little drink before they do that or something.
That is true, too.
I mean, I know this is sort of like can be a slippery slope or it can
or
just
even
be...
To,
go on.
I'm sorry. Or even to go and see somebody.
Yes, absolutely.
Apprehensive about.
Yes. So, and like I say, if there was something that wasn't dangerous, I guess that would be, to some people, quite interesting to know.
Yes, quite.
But everything would be dangerous in large quantities, let's face it.
Yes, quite so. But I'm saying, really, however, that the use of such things creates side effects, creates different pathways, sometimes illuminations that actually, to be honest with you, don't really exist.
Mm.
So many of these become fabrics of the mind, illuminations of imagination, rather than genuine contact. And then you have problems with who is it that you actually think that you're contacting, as opposed to who they actually are.
Or do you really want to open those doors in your mind? Because you don't know where it's going to leave and if you're going to be able to close them again.
Exactly. So my point really is that it's inherently at risk.
Mm.
If you are doing something like that and you're using some kind of narcotic or mind-altering substance in order to achieve it, is obviously going to leave you weaker and less defensible if you use that as an option.
Mm.
I'm not suggesting here either that I suppose many would say, well, I am going to say, obviously, reach for the highest and the best. Yes, but if you are going to do that and then take a narcotic or something that will actually alter your perception of yourself, then what it is actually going to do is alter the aspect of what you see, what you imagine, what you create within your conscious mind, and your actual ability to maintain that control. Now, usually people, when they are going to make visits with the spirit world, they abdicate their control for a period of time, or they illuminate it in such a way as to create communication on a very personal level.
Mm-hmm.
This may well be something that is all right to begin with, but that in itself will become like a narcotic effect. Sometimes I understand even people who do not take substances and meditate become so affixed by meditating itself and the effects that they are creating within their meditation that they don't actually have to take any other kind of substance, because simply their illuminatory experiences galvanize those kinds of substances anyway within them, or at least the recorded effects of them.
Yes, and the chemical release, the endorphins, yes, and the, yes, that sort of thing is very similar.
Yes, quite so.
Can be similar.
So don't forget, dear friend, that all of these situations are really trigger points in order to kick into action your ordinary chemical structure.
Mm.
And sometimes that's how they work.
Mm.
They're just simple trigger points to do that with.
I mean, I think the Native Americans did it because it was there. And they used to use, you know, all herbs, plants, whatever.
Yes, peyote because, is the same.
Yes.
The whole structure of that.
Yeah. And escapism in any form has been, you know, sort of widely relished.
Yes, so, I understand.
You know, and that's the other thing, you know, taking things for that or taking things for just like a reprieve from a very stressful life are two different things as well, because obviously we don't advocate you taking anything really when you are doing your meditations.
No, quite so.
So,
I do not personally, no.
No. No. Okay.
I certainly would not drink alcohol, for example, or many of the other substances.
No.
Even in now, if I was having a physical life now.
Mm. No. Not to do spirit work or contact.
Certainly not.
You know, open yourself up to the spirit world. No. Okay, well, that's lovely. Yeah. Thank you. Another question. Okay. I would like to know more about the Mayans, the Aztecs, and others who walked this path many moons ago, and what lessons can be learned from their ways today.
Yes, it's interesting, dear friends, that these two branches of peoples are significant in a sense, in many people's eyes and minds. I also drawn to many other tribal areas as well, of different peoples.
Mm, she did say, and others.
Yes. Mm. And the whole point is that within all of these settings, for example, the Mayans were not as wonderful or as beautiful as everyone paints them to be. There were many tribal horrors to do with the Mayan civilization. Very many to do with the ways in which some people were pursued, the way girls were in fact slaughtered as well.
Mm.
And in fact, both cultures practiced that. And in order to create a pathway to the spirit world.
Okay, yes. We have a caller. Oops. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, friend. Hello.
I was wanting to bring up something about meditation.
Yeah.
I was, over the years, noticing that being on the vegan diet, of refraining from beef or any kind of animal protein, tends to increase my psychic ability.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Quite true, dear friend. Absolutely.
So
and part of that, there are very, very basic reasons for that, my dear friend. Part of the reason is because of the actual cosmetic inoculations the animals have to have in order for them for their meat production.
I'm talking of injections and steroids and
all of that. Yes,
antibacterial drugs.
Yes, most cattle are given a great many steroids and different situations, antibiotics. Antibacteria, particularly within the husbandry of the whole situation of where they are dealing in really enclosed masses of animals in enclosed spaces. So this whole situation then is a state of great difficulty whereby many people simply don't realize part of what is being made to them. For example, within the whole situation of cycle of spongiforming encephalopathy, bovine spongiforming encephalopathy, as had been created within that situation, was obvious in many respects, simply by feeding cattle sheep. It was obviously going to be a system of a complete difficulty within this respect. And what you would find as being a vegan, my dear friend, would simply be that you wouldn't entertain any of that protein, any of that kind of very complex situations of, it's not just about that we are talking about these particular cycles of narcotics and very, very lethal combinations of certain kinds of serum, of which many human beings simply do not know, are not aware of the genuine side effects of eating such large amounts of this kind of food, which in fact means that the whole toleration of that kind of aspect would be altered. I take a case in point, my dear friend, in this, moving aside from your particular situation, but that in a sense making it in tandem with, you can look at many different native peoples groups, different tribal groups who are in fact in their illumination within their own physical life before the advent of Western European people was that they would simply take whatever buffalo they would need at that time, or deer or antelope or whatever, and that would be all well and good. Then the situation became that they had to actually change. Once all the buffalo had been decimated, the stocks had been decimated, and then they were taken to eating wheat and the eating of wheat simply did not agree with their metabolism. And that's exactly the same that you would have within this situation if you were a person who was eating meat regularly and you didn't mind particularly where it came from. It would be that you would be facing these narcotic poisons, which are then, in fact, building up within your physical body system, perhaps giving you very great difficulties within your liver function, kidney function, that kind of thing. And in point of fact, where this situation comes in full circle is within your case and your history, it has been that since being a vegan, you have been more susceptible spiritually. This whole point, of course, is because of the fact, as I had always said, that if you wish to truly attain enlightenment in this physical lifetime, you don't eat meat. And that's it. Full stop. If you wish to eat meat, do not expect to become an enlightened being in the physical life. That doesn't mean to say that you'll never be enlightened. It doesn't mean to say that you have to stay on the merry-go-round in order to be enlightened. It means that at some other point in your history as a pure, beautiful spirit, your consciousness will become actually entwined with your spirit, acknowledged as your spirit, and in that respect will become enlightened just the same. It's just that it won't happen within your physical lifetime being now, as for our dear friend, that possibility still exists larger and larger at each turn of his horizon.
So, Scott.
In general, in terms of eating tofu, I mean, there's so much about that. There are people who say the tofu is not something to take in large quantities, but it, I mean, if one just having one serving a day of tofu, you know, is a protein source, so as to kind of minimize the carbs a little bit, because I mean, too much carb is not good either. But to kind of stay down, to keep the protein level high and the carb level down, is it as poisonous as people are inferring? Some people in the health industry are saying that that large quantities of it don't do. That you know, I'm an A blood type. You know, I'm A positive blood type, and supposedly, according to what I've learned about my blood type and the nutritionists who I've worked with, they say the vegan diet is basically where I need to go. I mean, I can have a little bit of salmon here and there, perhaps in the wintertime, but in general, I'm just wondering, for the general population out there, is tofu okay to eat, or does it vary from person to person?
It, my dear friend, in actual fact, it would tend to vary depending on the genetic group, I have to say, in exactly the same way as I was mentioning in the situation scenario with wheat, for example. Wheat, in fact, is inherently, for some indigenous peoples, actually quite dangerous. And that is people of North American stock and also people from the Indian continent as well. In exactly the same as you would have high TB levels in people from the Indian nation and also from other peoples of indigenous people stock. So these are inherent situations which generally tend to be because their balance has to be different. Now, I would suggest, dear friend, that within your tolerances, that you would not be overburdened by protein in any event. The point is that you will be much, much better off if you keep to organic produce, such as within a local farmer's market or something like that, much more than you resting upon the supply from a large chain of stores and that kind of thing, purely and simply because it won't be washed with pesticides, it won't be a wash with, oh, and also, dear friend, keep clear of iceberg lettuce.
Okay.
So tofu.
Now the situation with tofu is that I understand that there are inherent dangers, possibilities, yes, but the situation is you could still eat more tofu than you could meat and get away with it. So the point is that there are situations of restriction that you ought to place upon yourself anyway, purely for your metabolism and for you need to settle at a level that really suits you, and it will be perfectly pertinent that you would work that out simply from how you feel that the effects of your discharge of waste is occurring. I'm trying to be neat here and not too disgusting. The point is, dear friend, that this situation then, obviously, if you feel that there are side effects within what you are eating that do not disagree with you, i.e. that you have an upset tummy or that you have burning sensations or whatever, I know that, in fact, spices do that as well. So there are, and spices are not inherently bad for you. They can be very good for you. They, so there are many different ways that you can enhance your tofu eating experience with many different forms. I suggest, in fact, Indian ways, Indian dots, not skin, will be a very good way of eating that kind of food. And for flavorings, of course, because it basically doesn't have much of a flavor at all.
No, so a small amount every day would be absolutely fine.
Yes, absolutely so. Mm. And even perhaps some days when you don't have any as well, you need to be able to change and vary your diet. So as much as you can.
It's protein, isn't it, when you're vegan, to try, well, apart from other things.
But, yes, quite so.
Yeah.
Yes. And in that respect, then, my dear friend, you would be able to drink rice milk and that kind of thing.
With salmon and things of that nature, with the mercury levels being as they are, is salmon no longer safe, would you say, in general, to all people out there? Is it kind of like getting to the place where it's not a good idea? Or is it... Yes.
It's very, very difficult, my dear friend Scott, about salmon. The whole situation about it is extremely difficult, purely and simply because some of this actually comes around because of mining operations and that kind of thing. The runoff, the simple agricultural, agrochemical runoff that comes from the ways in which agriculture just simply aren't listening to the needs and the need to maintain the water table at a certain balance, pH and that kind of thing. So they're simply not caring, as well as these situations of mining corporations. You also, of course, it's not just to do with mercury. You also have, particularly if you live around the Dakota areas, you have a great many open mines from uranium mining, which are still unclosed, and those have affected large amounts of the water tables in those areas. So there are huge systems within the water table of many different areas, particularly in North America, but also, I have to say, in South America too, the situation of salmon or many other forms of fishes which actually grow and survive in the different rivers are inherently sometimes polluted, purely and simply because of lack of care of human beings. Now, there may well be, as I have tried to advocate, that there are many situations where human beings may need to farm fishes in order to sustain themselves. It's not to say that I am well aware that maybe those people from a vegan attitude that who do not want to eat animals of any type, then that is all very well and good. Other peoples simply wish to do that. It's a matter then of that person's own personal choice, but also the ability, the availability of their different foodstuffs. And certainly it does seem to be that even within situations of farming salmon, that there are still inherent differences and difficulties within that as well. Purely because of the number of fish in the close proximity of it, and also because of the fact as well they do it too close to the shore. It needs to be further out to sea.
Where do you get your protein, Scott?
Well, it was for a while salmon until I stopped because that was also good for my blood type. But then I noticed that my neck started to hurt, so I thought I got to get off this. And when I stopped eating salmon, I immediately became pain-free again. And when I started the vegan diet and I'm eating tofu over the summertime, of course, it works really well over the summertime because it's like a summer food according to the Ayurvedic system and so on and so forth. So, you know, I eat that and I eat beans and I eat nuts and seeds, a lot of nuts and seeds.
Yes.
Sometimes eggs as well.
Yes, I understand, my dear friend. It may well be that you find that possibly that you will be able to... Sometimes there are potentials with trout which do not arise with salmon. That's all that I would say. So that if at times you feel that you would want to eat fishes again, then I would suggest that you try trout rather than salmon.
Thank you. And in terms of the general...
But that doesn't mean to say that you have to, my dear friend.
No.
I'm not suggesting that at all.
For the general population, are eggs suggested? I mean, can organic eggs be safe and can they be trusted out there?
Yes, well, this is part of the problem, my dear friend. Every single country will vary in this respect. For example, how your country presently has the understanding of what is organic doesn't necessarily mean it is organic. There are, I understand, moves afoot within the situation of the producers of your good country whereby they want things to become organic, but they're not actually organic at all. They actually feed them non-organic products. So you actually have to be very careful, and you do need to investigate yourself, because sometimes they may say, oh, well, the chicken that we grow is organic because simply they don't put pesticides on the land.
Mm.
But it may well be that the foodstuffs that they actually give them are. So are genetically modified or some such thing as that. Maybe even that they give the chickens animal products in order to keep them more weight on. There is also a situation, dear friend, perhaps sometimes even within the situation of what then happens to them, maybe even to do with the way in which they're fed, or perhaps that they are stopped from egg laying. With some places, I understand, they actually only allow perhaps an 8 or 10 week window for the chickens to lay eggs at all, and then they are simply sent off for slaughter. So it is really then about how human beings understand the whole situation of what those chickens are going through. Are they actually really kept in their own little houses, or are they in fact barn raised, which simply means putting 10,000 chickens in a small barn? And the inherent difficulties that will arise from that. Particularly with oftentimes with those sorts of situations, they might well say then, oh, well, they are being housed in their own places. They don't say how big the places are. And oftentimes what will happen in those situations is that some chickens will die and they just get left. So these are different situations which, as a human physical being, you have to appraise yourself. And that really is a matter of perhaps people within your dear country of actually being inquisitive and asking of the stores people who put these products on their shelves just how much they actually know about the individual products they are selling. Perhaps then that might be something that you will more easily and carefully identify, particularly if you are going to a farm shop or something like that.
Okay. Well, thanks ever so much, Scott. It's been lovely talking to you again. Have a nice day.
You too. Bye.
Yes, thank you, sir. God bless, my dear friend.
Yes, it can be very difficult. Various places do better, shall we say, vegetarian food anyway than other parts of the world.
Yes.
I have to say, I found it very difficult to find vegetarian food nice, you know, sort of interesting vegetarian food in certain parts of America when we were there.
Yes. Mm. I understand that. It's obviously difficult, not so difficult with the situation of nuts and that kind of thing,
no,
maybe,
that's right.
But certainly for certain kinds of foods, it may well be quite difficult inherently, simply maybe part of what you have to do is understand perhaps the actual organics of growing certain forms of food, or what it entails, for example.
Well, yes.
With iceberg lettuce, the fact that it has to be sprayed with insecticide every so many days.
Mm. Yes, and we've only got a minute left by the looks of it.
Yes, during the entire length of its growth. So,
gosh, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yes. It's enormous.
But I think the thing as well that doesn't make it easy for vegans, vegetarians, or just people that want to eat healthily, really, or not too much meat, if you're travelling on the road or wherever, airports,
yes.
You know, gas stations and that sort of thing, the fast food situation is never very good for people like that. The choice, the range of choice that you get.
Yes.
It's one thing if it's got additives and things in it. It's another thing if you can't find anything that's not got meat, you know, in it. So
yes.
It is a problem. So there is a big market there, a big void there. Anyway, we must go because we come to town.
Yes, yes, very well. Very well, with love and light. Blessings be, dear friend. God bless everyone.
Thank you, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for your questions from the UK Collective, and also thank you to Scott for his questions on the telephone. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Bye.